You tell me, we start now, or what's the story? Yeah, oh, okay. Good, so I'm on a cell phone, I'm not actually home, so Bez Hashem, hope the quality will be okay. Okay, we're holding here on my page, Nun Aleph. In other words, he goes through all the Masechtas, how many there are, the order, and all of these are things that we pointed out in Pirkei Avos, some of the things that I felt were important, but the other things are just some sort of flow of how they all fit into each other. V'rol is stapik b'shmos matike ha'shmua b'yosek krov me'elov mishim natzadik. He said, Rabbeinu HaKadosh saw fit not to bring earlier people than Shimon HaTzadik up to his times. In other words, we don't have any takanas gzeiris in the name of people in the Mishnah, except from Shimon HaTzadik, and not much at that, and the closer to his door, that was the in whose name it was said. I'm not sure, the Rambam doesn't say why. It's very possible that once halachas had become fixed halachas, there was no point really in giving the names of where it's coming from, because once the Bezin voted it was fixed, it was only the later Doris, really Shammai and Hillel and so on, where there were machlokas, and then it was significant to have it listed. But at any rate, we have the later ones. V'som dvar of ba ritzon eloyim b'mishnah dvarim k'tzorim kolim yonim rabim. The Mishnah itself is brief with much included in it. Let's talk about this a minute or two, because it caused a lot of confusion. When you learn a Mishnah, the Mishnah itself many times seems almost not to be saying what it's supposed to be saying. I'll give you a measure. There's a Mishnah in Baba Kama, Shum Kesef, Vishave Kesef. It's two words that you need a whole back and forth in the Gemara to explain it. It sounds almost as if it's contrived. By the time the Gemara gets through, it's a machlokes, and you pass like one person, and what he means to say is this or that or the other one. To us, it sounds as if it's something that's very, very far from pshat. The Gemara actually uses that klal and distinguishes between amoroim and tanoim. An amora that says something, we assume that he means what he says fairly literally. We don't sort of bring in any pshatim into what he's saying, as opposed to a tana that it's an incredible amount of pshat. And the answer is that Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the Mishnayos were almost mnemonic devices. They're not meant to read the way they are. They're meant to be condensations. I once told somebody, I was arguing with somebody, the person thought I was off my rocker. I told him that the Gemara came before the Mishnah. And he said, what are you talking about? So, you know, we were going back and forth on this. And finally I told him, you know, the Gemara, not the literal when they had these arguments, but the Torah Shebal Peh until Rabbeinu HaKadosh's time was a full Torah Shebal Peh. In other words, people said what they meant what they said, and spoke about it. But the Mishnah itself was almost the minimum needed just to be able to recall the Torah Shebal Peh. I guess the explanation that's most given is that since writing down Torah Shebal Peh is a b'di'evit, me'ikra din, you're not supposed to write down Torah Shebal Peh. It was only permitted on the grounds of Eis Lasas Lashem Yifere Torah Secha. They saw that people would not be able to remember it all. So their attempt was to write down as little as possible. That was the intention of those writing it. So you can't come with tainus and say hayitochen. It was written to be the way. For instance, imagine we would find somebody's personal notebook. You know, the stuff that we keep for little notes, and you'd find all sorts of half scribbles and scribbles in a word or two, and I would explain to what the person meant. If I knew what the person meant, it would not at all be a contradiction that it's you're putting a whole paragraph into a word and a half, because that's the nature of those type of notes that you scribble on a pad. You just sort of want to have something to jog your memory. That was the nature of Mishnah. The Gemara came at the next stage, where they realized that the Mishnah itself was not going anywhere, and people could not make heads or tails of it. Really, they couldn't figure it out, and then we had no choice, and we had to have the Gemara give us the entire pshat. That is the pshat why Rabbi Kodesh made it short, and then the Gemara itself is actually a tremendous elaboration. It's sort of bringing everything out. I once heard it says the Rambam brings Rav, who's Talmud. The Rambam in Chasdeis, when he speaks about the mid of Shtika, he says Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh. It says on him that never spoke Sicha B'Teila. So somebody once asked, what's the introduction of Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh? It's not as if there are people who heard of Rabbeinu didn't hear of Rav. Pretty much everybody heard of both. So I once heard, I think from Moshe Shapiro, he told me, he might have told us the name of Rav Hutna, I don't remember, and he said that Rabbeinu HaKadosh's midah was brevity, and therefore Rav, who didn't speak a Sicha B'Teila, is a hemshech. He's to be seen in terms of that personal trait of his as following in the footsteps of his Rebbe. That was the way he explained it. It's the Rambam models actually says that he's going to use Rabbeinu HaKadosh's Lashon, the Lashon of the Mishnah, wherever he can. So he certainly does it in terms of the vocabulary and the style, but also in trying to be brief and precise. However, the difference is the Rambam is meant to be understandable. The Rambam wrote it because for people who won't know the Gemara, and therefore he tried to make a sort of a Mishnah style out of it. But, and he writes, Ritzayin Eloyma, V'som Dvarabar, Ritzayin Eloyma, Mishnah Dvarim, Ktsarim, Kol Yon Rabbi. Short phrases that are meant to include a lot of things. And basically he meant that we should use our mind to figure out, one second, this Mishnah is contradicting this Mishnah, it must be talking about this case as opposed to that case. So it's not contrived when you push it in, that's what it was meant to be. So he says, V'hoyeze mivuretzlo l'charifus tivavutuv sichlo. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, this was fine, no problems. The Mishnah was just what he needed. Avlimisha tachtav harizah koshalov. But anyone who is lesser than him, it's a real problem. So they would actually go ahead and try and make some sort of chiburim. So they would actually, the first versions were done on a personal level. But ulefikach ro echad mitalmidav urabchia lechabe seif sheirbik was rabo. So Reb Chiya wanted to make a sefer that would be like Rabbeinu HaKadosh, v'yivayabo hakoshem diverav, but he'll explain the things of Rabbeinu HaKadosh that are problematic, that are hard to understand. V'atosefta, this is what we call tosefta and brises. Kiven bo bir ha-mishnah, the idea of it was A, to explain the Mishnah a bit, v'yisofas inyonim she'efshot tzimene Mishnah, adding things that could actually be deduced from the Mishnah, but not easily so. Avul acha yegia, voitziom de lamdenu hech notziv notos on a Mishnah. So it's also meant to be a a more user-friendly version, and B, it's meant to be an example of how one ought to treat the Mishnah, how much could be in a Mishnah when it's in a Braisa. Okay, a point of reference. The word Braisa are found in two places. We find it in the Gemara. The Gemara will introduce a Braisa. The word Braisa, by the way, means outside. In other words, it was not the Mishnahs that were canonized. It was not in the canon of Rabbeinu HaKadosh's Mishnah. It's outside Mishnayos. And therefore, the Gemara will introduce it as Tanya instead of Tani. And that's one place where we find Braises. A second place where we find Braises are in the back of the Gemaras, in the back of most Gemaras, there's something called Tosefta, which has a few prakim of Mishnah-like material, for those of you who are familiar with it, and those are also braises. The status of a braise is that it is higher up in the hierarchy than a Gemara. An Amoruk will not argue on a braise. It's not as definitive as a Mishnah. And therefore, wherever the Gemara can bring a kasha from a Mishnah, it prefers it over a Braisa, even if it needs to work a bit to get the kasha out of the Braisa. On a practical level, the Braises that we have in the Gemara are fine because the Gemara actually works them through and gives us a pshat. The Braises that we have in the back of the Gemara, that's called Tosefta, are very difficult because they were not much learned. The gersos are very, very tricky. There are a lot of different changes that a gersa by different achronim. We don't have, it hasn't been studied in a systematic way, so there are large chunks of it that we can't actually access. Someone who did a phenomenal work on it, his name was Professor Shaul Lieberman. He was an extraordinary person. He was an absolute genius in terms of memory and structure and stuff like that. He was a frum Jew. He was actually related to the Nziv. He was a first cousin of Chazon Ish. He also was the head of JTS, which was the Conservative Theological Seminary, which technically was not part of the conservative movement, but it was de facto conservative movements, the conservative movement's seminary. He himself was a frum person, and he was obviously quite sort of in limbo. Many people didn't want to have much to do with him, but he himself was a frum Erlich Yid and so on. He wrote a masterful work, volumes and volumes. It's called Tosefta Kipshuto. What he does is he analyzes different girsos, different texts of the Tosefta, determining which is the right one. He brings all the Rishonim that speak about it and talks about it and tries to get to the core of the pshat. And this was, mind you, pre-computer dates. I mean, this is, the person was a phenomenal master, and it's an extraordinary work. It is definitely, it's sort of, so people have a bit of an ambiguous, they sort of look at it a big of ambiguous type of relationship. It's, on the one hand, it's one of a kind. On the other hand, they don't want to go down as sort of approving of the fact that this person, it tacitly was not, you know, sort of gave a nod of approval to the conservative movement. At the end of the day, people don't actually use Tosefta much because even his work, as phenomenal as it is, at the end of the day, it's not a trodden path. It's a phenomenal guesswork, but it's not something where we have a clear Mesoras, the Rishonim, arguing about it and chewing it up and so on and so forth. So it is what it is, and that's what exists at. Another very nice pirush was written by somebody named Rabbi Chaskal Abramsky. He was one of the Gedolei Ador. He died in the 1970s. He was a Talmud of Chaim Brisker. He wrote on the entire Braisa a Pirush in Pshat and Lomdisha pieces on it, Yeshivisha style pieces on it. It's a very nice work, but it, in terms of the magnitude of work, it doesn't hold a candle to Professor Liebman's work. It's a nice work in its own right. His points are nice points and so on, but it's hard to call it a comprehensive exposition on Tosefta, but that is the Tosefta we have. So Reb Chiya wanted to one more thing I wanted to mention, where the Rambam is coming from. The Rambam makes a point here, and it's important to understand that the Rambam doesn't say things off his cuff. The Rambam makes a statement here that he wanted the Tosefta had in it the Bir HaMishnah and the addition of things that would be possible to deduce them from the Mishnah. It's actually built on a Gemara. There's a Gemara in Tainis. It says Ulf and Rabbi Yochanan were big Talmidei Chachamim. Ulf and Rabbi Yochanan were both learning in Yeshiva. Their financial situation was extremely difficult. They went off to look for some sort of business opportunity. Rabbi Yochanan heard a baskol that whoever goes back to learn will become an excess yeshiva. Ulfa did not hear a baskol. Rabbi Yochanan returned. Ulfa did not return. Many years later, when Rabbi Yochanan was in fact Rosh Yeshiva, Ulfa was kind of very, very peeved. He was upset. And it says he went up to the top of a mast of a ship and said, if someone can bring me a braisa and I will not be able to deduce it from the Mishnah, then I will jump. And sure enough, they asked him a braisa, and he immediately produced a Mishnah that one could deduce it from that Mishnah. It's fascinating, why was that the particular test? But this is what the Rambam is alluding to, that he added things that could be deduced on the Mishnah, but you need a lot of work. Rabbi Yishe also did it. So there we have so Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yishe gathered together these Toseftas, and that became one type of Braisa. V'Rav Gamken Chiba Braisa V'Sifra V'Sifri. He put together the Sifra and Sifri. Now the Sifra and Sifri are a Medrash that is in the order of the Chumashim. We have what we popularly call Medrash is what's called Medrash Agada. It has all the Agada, the stories and the Musar and so on. That's the Medrash Rabba, Medrash Tanchuma, and Pirkei Rabbeinu are the most famous of these. We also have something called Medrash Halacha. It exists on Shmos, and it's called Mechilta. It exists on Vayikra, it's called Safra, or Toras Kohanim. It exists on Bamidbar and Devarim, and it is called Sifri. Now, these four works, these four Svarim, are the drushes of Chazal on the order of the Psukim. So whereas, let's say, a sugya in Yevamos would bring a halacha, a mishnah bring a halacha, and the Gemara says, where do you know it? You know, from here, you dash it this way, b'na ein lo banim, ayin aleh, and so on. That's the structure of the Talmud Bavli. The braises, the safra, sifri, or mechilta and Toras Konim, as the safra is known, usually will have it in order of the psukim. So every pasuk has a drasha that follows it, or you know, every pasuk that has a drasha following it, and the drasha is it dash into the pasuk. It will bring machlokis that we have in our Bavli. It's a work that overlaps with our Talmud Bavli. It's not normally used that often. The place where it's used in a way that is That's a lot more where it's very significant is the learning kachim, being that Seder kachim is built strongly around psukim. It's all drushes. As opposed to the parts that deal with nezikim and nashim, which are a lot of svaris and takanas and so on. Kachim is almost all psukim. It has no svaris there. You can't deduce a halacha and kachim from a svara. So the safra, the house kind of is very important. You have Rishonim that wrote, the Ravid notably, who wrote on the safra pirish. And that pirish is considered one of the Rishonim on Kachim, which doesn't have any Rishonim, and it's a very significant element in the learning of Kachim. The one that wrote notable pirushim, I'll just pick out the Malbim. The Malbim, in his attempts to show that Torah Sheba'al Peh is intrinsically bound with Torah Shebiksav, it speaks about all of the drushes as they appear in Safra, or Torah's Kanim and Sifri, and he explains how it is that Chazal darshan the Pasuk, what is it about the Pasuk that allows it to be darshaned. He does a major job on it. His Pirush on Chumash, wherever it is Halacha, deals with associating the Torah Sheba'al Peh with the Torah Shebiksav, how the derivation is, what the rules are, and so on. The Netziv also wrote a remarkable pirush on it, on Sifri, and those are just significant pirush. There are other pirushim, but those are two ones that stand out. The what's interesting is he puts the order of it as being after Rabbeinu HaKadosh, because the Gemara says that Stam Sifri is his and Stam Sifra is him. It is understood today that I don't know if it's understood today, but it's assumed that the format of the Safra and the Sifri was the earliest form of Torah Sheba'al Peh. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu taught Klai Yisrael the psukim, the mitzvah, and the pirusha, like we saw. So it stands to reason that the way Moshe taught them would be, the psukim, and then at each pasuk he would say, and this is the Torah Sheba'al Peh on it. If arguments arose, logic tells you it would have been on those psukim. So as they were learning it, so. It's sort of assumed that the format of Safra and Sifri was the earliest format, and then Rabbeinu HaKadosh said, listen, it's very nice that to have it on the Psukim, but at the end of the day, the rabbi's got a paskin, he wants to be able to find, he wants to learn through all of his kitten, so you want to make Masech Deskitten, he wants to do Masech Deskitten, that's Ketushin. That's the way people said. The Rambam, not clear that what the Rambam means, but the Rambam says it was finalized by Rav and so on, which is the Gemara. The Gemara says that Stam Safra is like him, Stam Sifri is like him, and so on. V'chein osa gamayishika v'safi Rav Zulasa k'mayisha Amru, and there were many others who had the pseudo-mishnas. Ki osa Rav Ploini asa v'aysa masnita b'yadei. The Gemara will say when so-and-so came, he brought along a braisa with him, meaning that he showed us a braisa, or I think what he means to say is he had a series of braises that we didn't have. Aval, elo braises kulon lobo ara mishnah b'mesik dibura. None of these braises compared to the mishnah in its turn of phrase, in its use of language. Volo b'tikinu yinev gets ashona, nor to have the comprehensiveness and preciseness of language. The Mishnah became the Ikka, the other ones became useful as adjuncts to the Mishnah. And the Chazal, when they spoke about the hello. Yeah, when they spoke about the how the Mishnah compares to the Braisa, they said Ro'os Bonos VaYashua Melachos UPilakshim VaYaluha. So the Melachos and the Pilakshim are the Melachos are the Mishnayos, the Pilakshim, which are the secondary wives, are afterwards. V'chol mi she'omer achrov v'acher oisa chabura nechbada omnum hoisa tachlis avonis evra mishnah. Anybody that followed after that, his point was to try to understand the Mishnah. V'lo chadal dora chador lezbonu balafarsha. Every single generation tried to understand it and explain it. Kol chacham lefi erech chachmaso binaso. Each chacham tried his best to explain it. V'nechleku b'firushik tas halachs menem esh chashanem. And machlokas arose as how to understand the Mishnah. Ve'ein kacha leizbeinav leirin toledos v'chomir chakiris. And every group would think about it, analyze the Mishnah, they would enlarge the Mishnah, they would add they would add things that they felt follow logically from the Mishnah, they would inquire as to the Mishnah. In other words, all of the learning and the Mishnah produced a volume of scholarship in its wake. And this, so Torah was now increasing. Ad she'igia zman shel Ravina v'Ravashi, v'im sof Chachmei HaTalmud. So Ravina and Ravashi were the end of Chachmei HaTalmud, and they, when they came to the fore, there was this huge mass of learning that had been done from Mishnayos till then. Bizboded Rav Ashi l'chabe chibur, v'rolasos b'divrei kol mishabach ben hakodesh, kashosar ben hakodesh divrei kol mishabach Moshe. He did the same to all of those members as a ben hakodesh did to what had been before him. In other words, a sorting out, a collection, a verification process, a sifting process. V'kibetz kol ma'amore ha'imrim v'izboinus ha'mizboinu pirsham farshim v'diktik ha'shmuz v'kibtzon v'hikva kol bedaitoi. So they gathered together whatever everyone had said, they looked into it and collected it, and they tried to encompass everything. Kasher chanona Hashem erecha v'lei v'avas ha'chachma, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him through his tremendous understanding and love of wisdom, v'chibar Talmud, and he created the Talmud. In a sense, one could say this is what the Rambam himself also did. The Rambam himself was exactly the same. He saw the development of Chachma before him, felt that it was, the Rambam was more practical, he felt it was too big for anyone to possibly, you know, for practical use, and he put it together. But he's talking about Rebbein HaKadosh. V'som kavanosu be'arba dvar. The Gemara had four purposes. Ha'echot, pirush ha'mishnah, explaining the Mishnah properly. V'chol ma she'nofel b'dvar ma'mistapkim bo, b'machlekes ha'pirushim, and all issues of unclarity in the Mishnayos. V'tainas kol mefoshach haver, every taina that one has on the other one. V'gilu tainas emes. V'zu hakavan shel Hashem. So the first point of the Gemara is to explain the Mishnayos, what the Mishnayos mean. That's the first. Now the by the way, the Gemara says a very strong lashon. What it says, if somebody learns Mishnayos, the people learn Mishnayos, destroy the world. What the Gemara means is, and it's quite clear, because if you take a Mishnah at face value, in other words, as is, you definitely are wrong. Mishnayos cannot be learned at face value because they weren't meant to be at face value. It's meant to be simply a clue as to the halacha. The Achronim write that Bizman Hazeh, when we have a pirush like the Rav, who sort of condenses the Gemara and brings it on the Mishnah, that is fine. Now, if we learn Mishnayos with the Rav or any other any biur on the Mishnah, any explanation that encompasses what the Gemara said and explains the Mishnah in light of the Gemara is definitely positive. Chas v'shalom that there would be a problem. Vasheni. So the first purpose of this Gemara was to try and to explain Pshat the Mishnah. It includes sometimes the Mishnah is missing a piece. Sometimes the Mishnah is going only according to one Mandiyama, not according to the Chachamim or not according to the other Mandiyamim. Sometimes the Mishnah is speaking about in a certain case only. It requires a qualifier for the din in the Mishnah, and sometimes the Mishnah is really hinting at something broader than that. Those are all the different things that the Gemara does when it deals with the Mishnah. Two, Vasheni, Psak halacha gedas achas acholkim, asher nafla machlakotam beguf haMishnah or beferusha, or bememoitzemenu vamakish eleho. The next thing is Psak halacha. Who do we paskin like? So sometimes we have klolim, you know, acharam lahatos and so on, and it's fairly easy. They're fairly consistent. Many times we don't have, and sometimes we have unusual cases, exceptions to the rule, and the Gemara needs to paskin. The Gemara will give us an indication of psak by saying behilchas akir, or it'll have a tuft on somebody, or it'll somehow indicate the halacha. The Rishonim tried to do that in those subyas that the Amoraim did not do. But paskening is part of what the Mishnah doesn't paskin often. Sometimes will say v'halacha, but most of the time not. The Gemara usually will try to paskin. Even if the Gemara doesn't paskin outright, it usually by the sense of the argument. For instance, this is a typical case. You'll find the Gemara has two man yamrim about a question. You'll have six kashas on one mandiyama, no kasha on the other mandiyama. We answered each kasha on the mandiyama that had these kashas, and the Rishonim will say, we paskin like the other mandiyama. And they'll ask, but, you know, we answered all the kashas, and they'll say, yes. But, you know, these prices, so Mishnai, seem to be a raya to A and a question on B. Even if you can get out of each one, but it still is a lot, it sounds a lot more that A standing on solid ground as opposed to B. So the Gemara will paskin either outright or will paskin in sort of by developing the argument, and then we can see where it's gone to. Ashlishi, hatolodos ashaholidu chachme koldor min amishna. The next. The things that follow, in other words, questions arose that the Mishnah did not deal with. In order to paskin, the Gemara used various Mishnayos, you know, as the, you know, to compare and so on and so forth. Vegilu ha'ikrim barayis ha'shalomdomem v'somcha l'matanoem da've Mishnah. And then they also tried to find the rayas where the Tanaim are coming from. Achenikva devrehem mashenikva. So v'hagzeres hakadosh etaknu ma'achar ben hakadosh ad elav. So he has a whole bundle of things in one area. One is trying to figure out new halachas and new dinim that needed to go back to the Mishnah, and we needed to say, well, this would follow in this case, and we'll prove it from this Mishnah, especially other Mishnah. We also wanted to understand, it's almost the exact opposite process, that one is a fast forwarding in the future. We're looking to see what fruits will the Mishnah bear. If the halacha is like this and this and such a case, so if the case would be this, then it would follow that the halacha would be so-and-so. We're sort of continuing the Mishnah into new areas. The other process is the opposite process. We're trying to dig up the roots. Where did the Tanurim come from? Were they arguing a Svara? Was it coming from a Pasuk? What's the machlokes in the Pesukim? How does each one learn the Pasuk and so on? This is all important when you're trying to understand what it says. Understanding what it's based on is very important. And he said there were takanas and gzeiros made after the time of the Mishnah, which we needed to sum up. So that was all included in the Gemara. What I find interesting is, you know, since the Bez Nagadol had become butl already before the Churban Bayis, which means somewhere in the middle of the Tkufas HaTanoim, in the Tkufas Amoroim, where had the Takanas in a central way get started? In a city, in a place, I understand, but there were no centers anymore, and to create a Takana or Zerv is interesting. You could do it locally. I'm not sure what the mechanism was to do it for Klal Yisrael. They were splintered, they were all over the place, and there certainly was no central authority. Finally, Harevi, Droshois Matimos Le'inyan Kol Perek Shizdamish Matzebe Drush. Important agadata, wherever, in a Perek, where it follows, I guess is the right word saying it, that there should be drush there. Let's talk about this a minute. It's fascinating that in the Mishnah itself, there is almost nothing that would count as Jewish philosophy, theology, anything like that. Divrei Musa, except for Pirkei Avos, which is Divrei Musa, with almost nothing else to it. Mishnayos are kind of very, very brief halacha pieces. Once in a blue moon you'll get a Mishnah that says V'chiyadov Shemayseh Simulchamas and so on, but at the end of the day it's a very, very, very halachic focused. The Gemara has in itself much agarata, and it's not clear so certainly the Gemara wanted to give us over these inyanim, we'll call them a Jewish theology of sorts. I don't know, and I don't have a good word to describe it. The question that I don't know, I don't have an answer for, is why the Mishnayos don't have it. Maybe my assumption would be it's very hard to be brief on theological and philosophical topics without the real possibility that somebody become an apikoros. And you know, it's one thing in halacha where you recognize it as being truncated, or you ask a shayla. But if people just will learn Mishnayos will say strange things, we might have a problem. It might be people remembered it well. It might be with some reserved for chachamim only. I don't know. But be it as it may, the drushes are also part of the Gemara. It's interesting. He says it. He says drushes masimos leinyan kol perik she's damin shematze bedrush. I don't know if he means Perek in the sense of an epoch of time, in other words, at a certain, you know, different times that they felt it was important, or did they mean to say that it's a, does he mean to say in each Perek? We have some agadatas. Most of the time, agadata seems to go off on a tangent rapidly, or almost with almost no excuse, and we end up in pages of Agadata that seem to be, hanging on to the flimsies of threads to a Perek. I understand that to be because they needed to put in certain Agadatas, and they wanted to put in a certain body of Agadata, and they picked, and especially since it's so, let's say, Amochas Asfina, you have the strangest famous Agadata, Rabbi Chana Baraba, and it's... and it's all very mystical, and it hangs on to the fact that it's talking about an ocean and so on and so forth. Reb Tzadik HaKoyen is very big on saying that every Agarata is in the perek that is most appropriate for it. And even if you can't find in Pshat, but certainly in terms of deeper content, it's most appropriate. But the thing that jumps to mind, that comes to mind, is that the Agaritas about Eretz Yisrael, we would expect to put it in Kachim. The Masechta that has the bulk of Agarata Eretz Yisrael is Ksubis. Now, Ksubis deals with marriage, it deals with Nisuin, the final part of the marriage, as opposed to Ketushin. Now, Matan Torah was like the Ketushin, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us as a nation, or Yetzias Mitzrayim, let's say, but the taking us into his house, Nisuin, which is the full marriage, and that is halachically the chasen taking the kala home, that's ksubis. So coming into Eretz Yisrael would be the coming home, coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's home of Klal Yisrael. It's interesting, you know, it's fascinating. Erev Tzadik, with his deep mind, is able to find extraordinary agaritas that fit into places that you would never imagine why it's fitting in there. But al kapanim, that's what it does. So these are the four tachas of Gemara. The Rama will now continue to speak about agaritas and so on. That's the next piece over here. Any questions we have? Okay, so Kol Tov. Are we on next Sunday? What's the story? Yeah, okay, so.